Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Molly and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. You hear, of course, the fine folks at WSCR sharing some highlights. Jake Arrieta's voice and, of course, Miguel Montero. That was controversial. Let's get out to the CarX Tire and Auto Hotline. Your CarX man has air conditioning performance check starting at $19.99. There we find Chris Bossio, the Cubs pitching coach, and Chris David Haw is sitting in today for Brian. So welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, Chris. I'm good. Morning, guys.
Hey, Chris.
You know, Chris, we've listened to the Miguel Montero tape for quite a few times here, and we're getting a lot of reaction to it. Were you surprised by his reaction and sort of his, I don't know what you'd call it, maybe trying to put some of the blame on Jake? Did that surprise you?
No, these guys are competitors. And, you know, every day we bring emotion, just like every other team. It's part of the game, it's the heat of the moment stuff, and for us, right now we're up. I open the blinds, it's a sunny day, and we got another game. So, I mean, it's part of the game.
Boy, Chris, the direct criticism of a teammate, though, seems like it might have violated some sort of code in the clubhouse. At least that is the way it seems from afar. Are you telling me, do you think that there won't be anybody upset with the way Miguel, what he said, because of who he is or because of that's the way he is in terms of being candid?
Well, I can't speak for everybody else. I can only speak for myself. And I've been in this game a long time. I've seen a lot of stuff in the heat of the moment. I don't sit there and keep replaying it like you guys do, however everybody wants to. You know, we're trying to win a ball game. And, we're not playing up to par baseball for us because of the way we play. When you make fielding mistakes, pitching mistakes, or we take in, poor at bats, we're just not playing consistent baseball. And I think that's more of the frustration for Miggy and all of us. It's something that, we're trying to do. It's just not happening, and stuff happens. I can't speak for anybody else but myself. I really didn't, my mouth didn't drop wide open when I heard the comment. We surely didn't help our matters by the way we played the game. That's not our style of play. It was just a sloppy game all around against one of the best pitchers in baseball. And when stuff happens defensively, our guys try to go out there and strike out the world, and then they press, and then the hitters press, and kind of the tail of our season. We just haven't been able to put it together, and I think it's just a at moment sign of frustration that I really don't think much into.
Yeah, I mean, it's very unusual, 7 stolen bases. In fact, I believe that's a Washington Nationals team record, and that dates back to when they were the Montreal Expos. So there was a lot of good leadoff guys, fast guys on the bases with the Expos, and I know the Nationals haven't been around that long, but 7 stolen bases, a ton, and it's hard to win games when that's going on in the running game. And who is culpable? Is it the pitcher not getting the ball delivered quickly enough? Is it the catcher not gunning a guy down? How do you evaluate that?
Team game. If it starts with ground balls. I mean, say a ball's hit another 2 feet to the left, we're able to make the play on, but you got to give the player credit. The guy the guy pushes the issue with speed. And speed, you know, is a very valuable thing and makes you do things under duress. And they got a guy that's probably one of the fastest guys in all of baseball. And he was able to get on base last night, something that we were able to control the night before. We made some plays on him. Last night we didn't. He got on. He caused havoc. That's it.
You know what's bizarre, Chris? I don't know if you know this or not, but apparently StatCast released their sprint speed rankings. He's actually the 16th fastest player in baseball. It seems like that's ridiculous. The 14th fastest player, according to these statistics, Ian Happ. Isn't that crazy? I just wouldn't imagine that. I think Happ's fast and everything, but I wouldn't imagine he beat Trey Turner in a sprint race.
I pay no attention to that stuff. It's game speed. It's at the moment stuff. All that stuff. I really don't have time to sit behind my desk and look at. I've got. Other things during the game that we're trying to do, other things before the game we're trying to do, and certainly, other things that we're trying to do right now. So to get ready for today's game, but all that stat cast, launch angle, exit velocity stuff, I really don't pay a lot of attention to.
Between starts, Chris, is this something that Jake does work on, and how much of it is a point of emphasis? And did Miguel Montero have a point? I mean, obviously, he had no problem with what he said. Is there some validity in the fact that, the pitchers, he put him in a tough spot last night?
Well, we'll continue to work on stuff with Jake. We're constantly monitoring this thumb. It seems like that's behind us. But again, when you don't play good team baseball, teams, not just our team, any team, will do things out of the ordinary and press a little bit trying to get everything back or strike a guy out. And I think that was the case last night with Jake, where he probably tried to avoid contact a little bit too much. But, when you lose a lead like we did early in the game, with some mistakes that we made as a team, then you're probably going to do things that you don't normally do. And I think yesterday was one of those games. You got to give the Nationals team credit. They were patient. They've got a veteran team over there. They wait you out. They love to swing for the long ball. The offensive numbers, we're facing one of the best offensive teams in baseball. And, we're not quite there yet. So, we got to try to do everything we can to hold them at bay and win these close games on the road when we're not as healthy as we'd like to be. Like I told Len Casper before the game yesterday, we're still going to show up. We're still going to fight. And, Pena came in after Arrieta yesterday, did a good job. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that we wanted to see out of Pena when he came in was not give in that spot with the pitcher sitting behind him. And they were able to get a big two-run double there that really did some damage as well. And quite frankly, gave them that cushion that they were allowed to get Scherzer out there after six and then go to their bullpen. So, we're just not playing the baseball on a consistent basis. We'll have one good one, one bad one. We'll blow out offensively. We'll have I think we've had a pretty good stretch pitching-wise, but pitching and defense go together. And when we're not fielding the ball, we're not throwing the ball over the plate, those two things, then it affects the offense, because the offense, then they're going to try to do too much. And it's not our style of play. And we just haven't been able to get things going. I mean, I think we got four guys up from AAA right now that weren't on the team when we broke. These guys are trying to find their way and just figure it out. Here at the big league level, this isn't minor league baseball. And facing a guy like Scherzer, we knew we had our hands full. So by, you know, by making some mistakes and not throwing the ball over the plate, and then our hitters probably getting a little bit anxious against the Cy Young Award winner. It, you know, that's the result we got yesterday, and it, you know, we're trying to win every game, but you know, we had our hands full yesterday, but we'll roll our sleeves up and get out there and fight again today.
Do you have any update on Kyle Hendricks? The word is that he's getting closer.
Yeah, Kyle had a good work day yesterday, getting closer. And he's, you know, to say Kyle Hendricks is a caged animal, it probably brings a smile on everybody's face because you just can't imagine him being like that. But, you know, Kyle's sorely missed. You know, what he brings to the team every fifth day, his competitiveness, that internal burn that he has, that just the team, it follows him. You know, being one of those quiet leaders like Chris Bryant, he leads by example. He's missed. You know, he's such a huge part to our club. You know, but again, you know, we've had a guy, I know we haven't been able to stretch him out too much, but you know, Eddie Butler coming up here and being able to pick up a couple wins and keep us in games is huge. Anytime you can get that for our, you know, I'm not going to, don't want to be disrespectful and call him a replacement player, but, you know, guys that we can plug in there and contribute is big. And that's what's really allowed us to kind of stay around. If we don't have contributions from some of these young players that we have, then, you know, we're probably looking up a little bit more than just being a game back. This thing's for the taking, and we're all kind of looking right now and smirking, going, you know, all we got to do is just keep doing what we're doing for right now. But, you know, watch out when we get healthy, because if we do get healthy, and when we get healthy, you know, we know we're going to get on this run and start playing more consistent baseball. But right now, it's a battle. It's a battle every day. It's a battle every night. And got some guys, you know, playing out of position. And Joe's, you know, doing a great job being creative. And the guys are fighting. And the one thing I love is the competitiveness that we have, because everybody knows the situation. So, you know, all those things that you want to see as a coach, they're there. The fight's there. The focus is there. Right now, we're just not playing real crisp baseball.
Chris, before we let you go, last night they caught you when you went out to the mound on the way back, yeah, having some words with
Larry Vanover.
Vanover. And how often does that happen? They even referenced, I think JD said, that sometimes pitching coaches will just go to the mound just for that purpose.
They speculated that you had an opinion or two to offer.
Well, I did, and that's why I went out there. It wasn't for Jake. You know, at that time, I thought he was, you know, I thought he was throwing the ball well. He commanded the ball well. And I said, this is the one thing I want you to do is just remain calm. Let me handle it. I'm going to wait till he gets out here. And I did. And I asked Larry, quite frankly, I was like, what do you got? He's like, well, I missed one, and I didn't get a good look at another one. And I said, all right, well, our guy's battling, and we all got to be better. He's like, I know. And that was about the conversation.
He said, I know. You know? He actually acknowledged that he needed to get better?
Yeah, well, you know, he knows he missed one, and he admitted he missed one.
Right.
And I got the answer I was looking for, because I felt like Jake was throwing some good pitches that, you know, that weren't being called. And that's the other frustrating thing, is once you get into these swing counts, you know, our pitchers have options, our catchers have options to throw certain things to certain hitters. And when the pitches are made and they're not called, then we got to try to be a little bit creative with stuff and try to get these guys to swing at other pitches and to not get hurt and give up the long ball, which has been a problem this year. You know, this isn't the first game that I feel like we've had problems with strike zone. You know, some days a low pitch is called, some days a high pitch. Yesterday we felt like the high pitch was getting called, but then glove side stuff was being called a lot. And then all of a sudden we throw a couple pitches out there, we don't get them. And then that's when the players start pressing a little bit. And then if they get called on our hitters, we're like, you know, what in the world is going on? All we're looking for is consistency in the strike zone, which will bring consistency with our players. It's tough when you've got a floating zone. And, you know, for Larry's knowledge of that, he missed one. So all I can say is, okay, let's say my guy's trying to get better. Let's do the same thing. And that was about it.
Chris, thanks a ton. Great catching up with you.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, guys.
This segment with Chris Bosio is brought to you by Rosen Genesis. Introducing the new Genesis G80 at rosengenesis.com. A lot there. I guess you don't need to have a hug it out. You don't need
he's
to have
not
a
bothered.
Sit down.
He did not sound bothered
he's,
at all.
He's not replaying it like we are?
No.
Okay. Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score. David Haw, the fine lead sports columnist of the Chicago Tribune, the only real sports columnist of the Tribune, writes the In the Wake of the News column. He joins us, and we are pleased to welcome in Mike Pettit of BP Wrigleyville, Matt Pettit, excuse me. I don't know if you had a brother, Mike, but we'd welcome him too. Matt joins us on the CarX Tire and Auto Hotline. Your CarX man has air conditioning performance checks starting at $19.99. And Matt, we were talking yesterday about the difference between Javier Baez at shortstop and Addison Russell at shortstop, and it was very interesting to find out that Baez's defensive rating via Fangraphs was 0.1, Russell's 6.2, and it doesn't seem that way. And it was suggested that we talk to someone that understands this defensive metric stuff, and it's a specialty for you, so help us understand why sometimes defensive metrics are difficult. The perception of it can be different than what the reality of it is.
Sure. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks, Matt.
I think that defensive metrics, to kind of understand how they're calculated, you kind of have to look at the game of baseball overall. I guess it's no secret that sabermetrics are into baseball, and they were the first sport where it kind of became in vogue, and that's because baseball, unlike the other sports, it's pretty easy usually to assign credit or demerit when things go bad or go worse. If a pitcher strikes out a batter, that's very clearly the pitcher's doing something well. If the hitter hits a home run, it's very clearly that the hitter, I guess, was doing something well. But for defense, that doesn't necessarily apply. So a guy can make a diving play. That doesn't necessarily mean he made a great defensive play. That could mean that he had a bad jump or something of the like. So defense, for a while, before these systems, like you said, on Fangraphs for defensive runs saved or ultimate zone rating, they were kind of in the eye of the beholder. And what these systems do is they try to kind of isolate the field into different quadrants than just the nine positions. And they kind of look on a position-by-position basis to determine how likely is that player to make this a certain play, be a line drive or batted ball. Various, I guess, inputs go into this to determine, I guess, how likely, I guess, how good a play really is, not just kind of how good it looks. But the problem with this is that unlike, I guess, at bats where you get probably four a game, or pitching where you're coming in and you're facing, as a starting pitcher, you're probably going six innings, you're not guaranteed to have, I guess, four or five defensive plays that are going to show your true talent. So there's always going to be some sort of sample size issues that kind of, especially as we're only about a little over a third of the way into the season, they're always going to, weird numbers are always going to show up that necessarily won't be there by the end of the year.
So Matt, we're talking today about Miguel Montero's comments last night about Jake Arrieta and his inability to hold runners and how the National Wild on the Cubs last night stealing seven bases. When you look at the defensive metrics and the numbers and all the piles of information at your disposal when evaluating and looking at Montero and Arrieta and base running statistics, how do you interpret who's more culpable in this discussion?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think that Montero's, he does have a point, but he's also in the wrong as well, not just because it's probably a bad idea to call your team out in public, but there are different ways, especially at baseball perspectives, where we kind of assign blame to in terms of who's really at fault for certain stolen bases. And there, I guess pitchers do play a role in it. I guess the runner's speed play a role in it. The catcher's arm plays a role in it. But if you haven't thrown out a single runner all year, essentially it's not hard to see that you're the common denominator in all of it.
And you know, again, with all due respect to Montero, just because a guy steals third doesn't mean you have to throw the ball into right field or left field. Excuse me. It's insane that he made that throw. It was so crazy. And
yeah, I think that's clear. That was clearly a frustration throw.
Right.
I think if that would have been the first base Turner had stolen, he probably would have put it. Or I think that was Taylor actually. If that would have been the first base stolen of the game, he probably would have kept in his back pocket. But kind of the way that game was going, the fiasco that was kind of unfolding, I think that everyone was kind of at a breaking point, and that was his.
And don't Contreras' numbers and his performance and just the way that he passes the eye test as well make Montero's words a little bit more hollow?
Yeah, they do. Catching is an interesting, I guess, position in terms of what we've discovered, I guess, just how to quantify it over the past probably 10 years. So I don't know if you guys have talked about framing before. I know Chris Bosio isn't a fan of Statcast, but I guess those types of systems have allowed us to kind of uncover value that catchers, I guess, can provide by framing, which is basically just stealing strikes. So if a ball is outside the strike zone and you're able to frame it in a way that the umpire calls it a strike, you're providing inherent value to your pitcher. So Montero is very good at that, and he's been very good at that for a while. And fortunately for him, we're in an era where stolen bases aren't necessarily that prevalent. I guess they talked about this a little bit on the radio, but I think Coomer mentioned it, that it's pretty rare for you to go, I guess, consecutive teams and face players like Dee Gordon and Trey Turner. So I guess those players just aren't in vogue as much as they were probably in the 1980s. So you can get away with just being a good framer and just not being great at throwing out base stealers usually. Unfortunately for Montero, it didn't work out last night.
He's Matt Pettit from Baseball Prospectus Wrigleyville, and we will let you go, Matt, but I just want to reiterate this one. I understand, you know, defensive run saves when I watch just with the naked eye, you know, Hayward in right field, and I see what that guy's doing and how he's saving runs. I don't think I get it when I see Baez versus Madison Russell. I think Baez makes so many flash plays that maybe I just think, wow, that guy's unbelievable. He makes a play where he runs down a ball and it's a spectacular dive and all the rest of it. And I think, wow, you know, could anyone have gotten to that? Am I being unfair to Addison Russell? Is the flash over consistency what is misleading to me?
It's an interesting question. I think that those systems and how they're kind of quantified, they kind of take, I guess they're not necessarily following the team every day. They look at the players from kind of a more unbiased view. So we've seen what Javier Baez can do over the course of three seasons. And I would agree, he looks flashier. But Addison Russell, I think just by those metrics and even by just the naked eye, it's very clear that even if, I guess, his range is still far superior than pretty much any shortstops. I guess the Cubs really, that's probably the saving grace of their season, and they've clearly constructed their team so that they're young enough on defense to where they have pretty much at every position versatile players and players who have range that can kind of save their pitchers. I guess it worked more out last year, save their pitchers runs and therefore pitches by just getting the balls that normal defenders wouldn't get to. So I don't think that Addison Russell's necessarily a worse defender than Javier Baez. I think that those systems are looking at, they're comparing them on a position-by-position basis, and since Javier Baez hasn't played as much shortstop, Addison Russell probably, just based on sample sizes, has had more chance to prove his worth there this season.
Matt, thanks a ton. Really appreciate the time.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
That's Matt Pettit from BP Wrigleyville. And, Joe, I don't know if you saw his story on defensive metrics. It really came from a conversation that you and Barry Rosner had on Hit and Run. And it's interesting. It made me feel like maybe he was correcting some of your false assumptions as much as mine.
Well, I don't think so, because I think where I stand is we still have a long ways to go with the defensive numbers.
Like, yeah.
We would love to say, oh, defensive war is what it is. defensive runs saved is what it is. Now we know if this guy's a good defensive player or not, because it's so easy on offense. You have all the stats on base, slugging, war, all that. And we trust those numbers, and it's based on results for the most part. But the UZR, some of it's way out of whack with different metrics. So I don't really know what to believe here.
Okay, Bosio.
What
did you make of what Chris Bosio had to say when asked about, it was just.
He's told StatCast to take that and shove it somewhere?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, basically.
I have no problem with him feeling that way. And I know he's a pitching coach and he came up and does things a different way. But don't all those numbers help you in some way? If someone tells you that Trey Turner's stolen 29 bases, don't you say, like, wow, maybe we should keep him off the base paths?
I think that's how most pitching coaches in baseball would respond. Don Coop would probably have a similar response.
Yeah, that's true.
Because that's just how they are.
Right.
But of course, they're talking about Trey Turner being one of the faster runners in all of baseball. He has 32 stolen bases now.
Ian Happ is faster than him and has one stolen base. Send Happ!
And he's working in an organization that clearly values that information.
Right. Theo and Jed and those guys,
So
they're not working with the abacus, pal.
He knew all about that. He just didn't want to hear it after seven stolen bases.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Mullen Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score. David Haw, the fine lead sports columnist of the Tribune here. And we have breaking news.
Yeah, it's official.
It's official.
Phil Jackson out as Knicks president.
Wow, that's an old one.
What could they get for Konerko now? The rights to Konerko. Hey,
Phil.
He's still part of the organization. He's calling Jake Berger.
That's right. He called Jake Berger.
So the White Sox could trade the rights to a Paul Konerko phone call.
For Phil? Phil Jackson made how much money? Kevin, you were just telling me. He made $11 million while he was with the Bulls the first go round.
Right. Over 9 years with the Bulls, he made $11 million.
9 years, $11 million.
And then in 3.25 years with the Knicks, with a 9-171 record.
Wait for it.
He made $60 million.
It's crazy what he made with the Knicks, but he was with the Bulls.
He earned his money with the Bulls.
89 to 98.
Okay.
That
was
20 years ago. 19 years ago.
I remember.
Yeah, you can do the math.
I remember Phil. I was around.
It's as bad of a tenure for a guy that, in terms of expectations, can imagine.
Again, Phil is the master coach. And the argument against him, master coach, the argument was always that he went to the preset team. When he was with the Bulls, he had the Jordan Bulls, and he oversaw six titles. When he went out to he went to Los Angeles, he had Kobe and Shaq, and he oversaw titles. He had Kobe and what's his name, and oversaw titles. The guy was here for a while. When you start talking about Phil in New York, obviously it's a different role. He's not coaching, but he's trying to put a team together. Now, here's the thing about it. While everyone's going to say Phil affected his legacy and all the rest of it, that organization was absolute garbage when he went there. And now he's leaving, and maybe it's worse garbage.
Worse.
He got one thing right. He got a draft pick right, and the guy didn't want to go to a meeting with him.
But he was trying to trade the guy that he drafted that he got right.
Porzingis.
He was trying to wrong a right.
Well, you're right. I mean, listen, I'm not defending Phil as team architect, but I'm just saying the problems with that organization, the Knicks, and no one in New York wants to hear it. No one cares. Again, expectations were not met. How do we measure expectations? It's the investment in the person by the franchise, whether it be trading for somebody and giving up picks, whether it be paying money, whatever assets you give up for that person, create the expectation. $60 million for absolute garbage is not meeting expectations.
He made $50,000 a day with the Knicks.
Wow. Yeah,
that's a lot of.
That's pretty awesome.
That's a lot of money to hire coaches who aren't there anymore.
Made that in 5 years working here at the Score. It's unbelievable.
What's he going to do now? Just kind of drift away into basketball oblivion?
Well, Phil was half retired anyway, right? I mean, how old is Phil? You think he wants to do this? Phil had 2 years left on his deal, and that was the end. Phil is 71 years old. He's not 65. He's not retirement age. Is retirement age getting older? I don't even know. But 71 is kind of long in the tooth.
What was the last straw? The fact that they wanted to re-sign Derrick Rose?
You know, that James Dolan is a joke. That guy is, again, he's like as bad an NBA owner as you're ever going to see. And I think that Phil, when you went there, when he went to New York, part of it is, you know, he's the reigning, you know, hero. He's going to return. He played there as a sixth man on those teams. Mm-hmm. He was a very, I guess he was a defensive specialist. Phil always looked like a guy who had a coat hanger still in his suit as he walked around, a big-shouldered, broad-shouldered man. But unfortunately, that never happened. You know, he wasn't coaching the team. He was bringing in people, and he wasn't putting together a good team. And I guess what finally got him was the Melo contract, which, you know, pick another one. You could come up with 1,000 reasons that Phil didn't work out in New York. But that's a tough place to do it.
It is a very tough place.
And he took a lot of the bullets that should have been aimed at James Dolan. James Dolan just hires people and tries to meddle, and terrible owner.
As long as he's still the owner of the Knicks, as the Bulls sort of begin this rebuild, at least they can look to New York and say, hey, at least we're not the Knicks.
But, you know, how about the NBA? I mean, it's just unbelievable that on Miguel Montero Day, we're sitting here talking about the NBA. And again, it's, you know, there's so many NBA stories that are going to be centerpieces for the next weeks to come. You know, we haven't even gotten to free agency yet.
With the beginning of free agency, you'll see a lot of this stuff.
You got Gordon Hayward and that situation, the Paul George situation, what's going to happen? Chris Paul now? Chris Paul to the Rockets? Really? And meanwhile, Phil's gone. So what does that mean? What does that mean that Derrick Rose has to go to San Antonio? Did you see that rumor?
Yeah.
What the hell is that? Why would Pop want that to happen?
And what's going to happen here with Dwayne Wade? Because obviously that's a guy. If the conversation's happening for a reason, and he could squelch it all, but he has been pretty silent about this.
Isn't he in France? He's at a fashion show or something.
Looking
for some skinny jeans.
He didn't sign up for a buyout, and I think that's what we're going to hear.
Let me tell you something.
For a rebuild.
Oh, but yeah,
he did not sign up for a rebuild.
He did not buy out, though. He signed up. And that the fact that they are rebuilding, that I mean,
he
I have
took
no
the
sympathy
guaranteed
for him.
Money.
That's exactly right. And now he's going to have to earn it. Expectations created by the investment. And instead, he wants them to pay him off. And
everything's pretty much negotiable.
Yeah, but I think he wants a lot more money than they want to give him, if John Paxson was correct in what he said. Should be a fun story to follow. We'll keep our eye on it. David, thank you as always.
We will see you tomorrow.
And Sean, thanks for coming in with David. You've got a driver today. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's probably my own driver.
It's very impressive stuff. And I want to thank everyone connected to the program. Thanks for calling and texting and emailing. And most of all, thank you for listening. It's Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.